When I was in seminary, they took us through numerous personality tests to make sure that we were fit for ministry. I'm not sure that any of those really help, because I'm not sure anyone is really fit for ministry. But one of the tests they put me through was the Myers-Briggs Personality Inventory, which has been great help to me in subsequent years. I am an INTP. And for those of you who know that system, you probably say to yourself, that explains a lot. INTPs are the Sheldons in the room. They are the odd ones that like to think and strange thoughts and in big theories, but that P on the end is what makes them the most frustrating, especially for their counterpart, the J's. I'm an INTP, and P means I like to keep options open. I don't like to really close down on any one thing. I hate lists. I hate planning. I hate thinking through what's to come during the day. The ideal vacation for me would not be a vacation planned out with every single hour occupied, but a week with nothing to do. Just an open space that's there before me, delightfully tempting me to do what I want when I want it. That's what a P is like, and yet even a P like me has to plan. And I have planned, and I've planned so much that I've discovered that in most of my plans, they tend to fail. In my teens, I planned on being a rock star. I planned on being a full-time musician. I practiced 6 to 8 hours a day, and then when I was finally doing it for 4.5 years, it almost killed me. And so that plan failed me. In my 20s, I planned on being a Bible professor or scholar. I came to Christ at 22 and I thought, you know, I just love the Bible. I love studying it. I think I'll try to be a professor or a scholar. I enjoy reading. I can take in information and remember it very well. And yet, in the midst of that plan, while going to Bible college, I was hired as a pastoral assistant and now I'm a pastor. That plan didn't come to anything. It failed me. In my 30s, my wife and I planned on having kids, and then we were unable. And we went through all the planning and trying to, you know, time things, and nothing ever came to fruition. And we were just about planning to adopt, and all of a sudden Carmen stuck. And then after Carmen came Owen and Adam. We planned on only having 2 kids, and I just listed 3, so you know where that plan went. In my 40s, I planned on my second pastorate to be at least as long as my first. My first was 10 and a half years. I was hoping to move to Connecticut, be there for at least 10, 20 years. That's something I enjoy. Long pastorates bear more fruit, in my opinion, than short pastorates. And yet, the plan came to nothing because we only lasted 2 years. Financially, we couldn't maintain our status or our position there. In my 50s, in fact, just recently, I planned at the beginning of September on starting rally day like usual. And then water came and ruined everything. I was performing a funeral service yesterday for someone that none of you know. I didn't even know. I had someone call me on the phone and say, Pastor, I think we're finally ready to bury our son. And that's a year and a half after the son died. And I got to meet the family and perform that funeral yesterday. And I realized that they planned on growing old and having the presence of their son with them. And instead, at age 32, leukemia hit him. And within 8 months, he was gone. And so their plans have failed. They have to rewrite the script. They have to think about life without this individual in their life anymore. So I plan, but the thing I've noticed about plans, in fact the one certainty about plans, is that they tend to fail just as much as they succeed. And they tend to fail because of that one certainty in life, that one certainty which is paradoxical, the certainty of change. It's that one constant in life, the one thing we know is going to happen. So we're called to plan and we do the best with the plans we have, but our plans ultimately have to yield to reality. And the reality we're all experiencing regularly is the constant flow of change that causes our plans to either be disrupted or have to be flexible enough to shift with the changing reality around us. That's why it's interesting to look at the Proverbs on planning, because our wisdom writer has much to say on planning. He sees it as a good thing, and it is a good thing. It's that process by where we determine what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. We take a view of our resources, of our skills, where we're at, what we hope to accomplish. We think about aligning those resources and skills in such a way that we can achieve the goals that we desire. Planning's a constant feature of our life. We do it in the long term. Parents and youth plan for career and college. We plan in our older years for retirement. On the short term, we plan for our holidays. I bet many of you know where you're planning to go for Thanksgiving and where you're planning to go perhaps even for Christmas. We plan for shopping. We plan for a night out with friends. And some of us even go so far as to plan out the bulk of our day. That's a good thing. Good plans help us face the future with confidence. However, what do we do when our plans fall apart? Where does the confidence go? What good are our plans then? And if our plans tend to fail just as much as they succeed, is there any value in planning in the first place? You know the saying, tell God your plans. You know, if you want to make God laugh, tell God your plans. Well, the wisdom writer offers us a paradox. He allows us to see both the benefit and the frustrations of planning with this paradox of planning, that it's wise to plan on one hand, but on the other hand, don't count on your plans coming to fruition because things rarely go as planned. And because there is this paradox, plan but remain flexible, the Proverbs writer is going to ask us to remember one very important thing, which we'll note before we're done. But let's go through those paradoxes first, the wisdom of planning. You noticed in the first two Proverbs before us that Caitlin read, you see this high valuing of planning. Without consultation, plans are frustrated, but with many counselors, they succeed. It's a wise thing to think about the road ahead and to think about all of the possible opportunities and to amass people around you that may help you see things more clearly, that may help you understand the road ahead and prepare for it better. So there's something wise about not only planning, but having people that help you think about the future that is before you. And then the second proverb, the plans of the diligent, and the Proverbs writer loves diligence, lead surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty, and the Proverbs writer hates hasty people. The word is impulsive, just acting impulsively, doing whatever you feel like doing at that moment and not thinking about the long-term consequences of it. Everyone who is hasty surely comes to poverty. And since the proverb writer has a love affair with diligence and planning and has nothing good to say about the impulsive and the hasty, you can see why the Proverbs writer loves planning. He understands that there's great value in it. However, he also recognizes that you shouldn't count on your plans coming to fruition. The next three proverbs, the plans of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. Many plans are in a man's heart, but the counsel of the Lord will stand. The mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. And then finally, that last one, all our steps are ordered by the Lord. How then can we understand our ways? And you see the dilemma. We're to plan, and yet the Lord can trump those plans. So how do we understand? How do we even make sense of how to even think about the road ahead? That is the paradox of planning. There is a sense in which we're called to plan, and yet our plans could come to nothing, and thus it's hard to understand. And thus you look at the very last proverb on our list, don't boast about tomorrow, for you don't know what a day may bring forth. Well, what is planning? But in some sense, boasting, tomorrow I'll be at work. Tomorrow we'll go to the store. Tomorrow we'll go to the retirement person that will help us think about our retirement plan. I mean, there is this great, great tension that the Proverbs writer is putting before us. And what's interesting is James sees that tension. James, who's an informed Hebrew, he knows his Jewish tradition, and yet he's come to faith in Christ, is able to put this tension together and to talk about what it really means to boast about tomorrow. It's not necessarily just planning about tomorrow, that's fine, but it's boasting as if God's not in your plans. Notice what he says. I'll read it again. I just read it a moment ago. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a town, spend a year there. We're going to do whatever we've planned to do. And then in verse 14, James says, you don't even know what tomorrow will bring. Your life is a mist. You're a vapor. Then you vanish. Instead, verse 15, here's what you ought to say. If the Lord wills, we'll live and do this or do that. The Lord's presence, the Lord's allowing has to be included in this. And that's why in verse 16, he has such strong words. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Why is it evil? Because it is chosen to not include God. God is not involved in the plan for the future. Instead, it's just the boasting, we've planned it and our strategy's bound to come true and what we've strategized will happen, and in spite of God's presence or blessing or even curse, it's going to happen. And James says, no, you've forgotten one very important part of that paradox of planning, that plans are no guarantee of success. You know that quote, the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. And that is true. Plans are no guarantee, because we don't have as much control as we think. Henry Nouwen, who's one of my favorite devotional writers, writes this: while realizing that 10 years ago I didn't have the faintest idea that I'd end up where I now am, I still like to keep up the illusion that I'm in control of my own life. He began as a priest, then was a professor, and spent the last 10 years of his life working with an individual named Adam who had hardly any motor functions, no intellectual functions, and he just cared for the guy, and it was so much of a blessing to him. And he never planned on coming to that end. He never saw himself being that kind of caregiver, and yet that's how his life ended up. That's why in this paradox of planning, there is the need to remember one thing, and this one thing may be more important than any plans we ever make. And that is, whatever plans we make, whether they come through or whether they don't, there's one certainty that's even greater than the certainty of change. And that is the certainty that God is involved in our plans, that God is active and alive. And when our plans change or are disrupted, there's a great mystery involved in our lives, which the third proverb up is alluding to. All our steps are ordered by the Lord. How then can we understand our own ways? Now that's a truth beyond fathoming, this mystery of providence. But it's not a truth beyond comforting. Because we can be comforted that even when our plans fail, even when we throw up our hands and don't have a clue of where we're going or how we're going to get there, we can know that God knows what God's doing. When things don't go as expected, we should never forget that God is with us, and we recognize there's an even deeper plan at work in our lives so that we can face that future, even if our plans have fallen to pieces, without fear and with boldness and with courage. Because whatever happens to our plans, whether they succeed or fail, God is still at work. This is wonderfully illustrated in the book The Shack. In the shack where Mac is meeting with Jesus in the shack after the tragic loss of his daughter, Jesus asks him a very poignant question. Jesus says to Mac, tell me what you're afraid of, Mac. And Mac says, well, I'm afraid of the future. I'm afraid of moving on without my daughter. I'm afraid of where this road might lead. I'm afraid of all the circumstances in my life. I'm afraid of all the challenges that await me. I'm afraid that I won't be able to face them. He just goes on with this litany of fears. And Jesus then, after he exhausts his fears, says to Mac, Mac, do you realize that your imagination of the future, which is almost always dictated by fear of some kind, rarely, if ever, pictures me there with you? That's a powerful statement. Do you realize, Mac, that your imagination of the future, which is almost always dictated by fear of some kind, rarely, if ever, pictures me there with you? Because Mac doesn't remember that one thing. Eugene Peterson, who just died in the last 2 weeks, makes this statement: when you make your plans, don't leave God out of the formula. That's the only part that makes any sense. That's the only thing that is certain. That's the only thing of which you can be confident, that God is the one ever-present constant in our ever-changing world. Which then leads us to wrestle with this paradox of planning in this way, and perhaps this might help you, perhaps it might not. We plan as if the future depends on our plans. We take responsibility for our actions. We're good stewards of what we have and what we possess, and we think about how we can best use our resources to get to an intended goal. So we plan as if it all depends on us, but we pray as if it all depends on God. Because it's not human strategy that leads to success. The growth, the harvest, whatever happens, is out of our hands. And you never know, God might show up in surprising and unexpected ways, disrupting your plans, leading you to a better place. I'm so glad I'm not a Bible professor. I'm so glad I'm not a rock musician. I'm so glad for many of the plans that I had planned that didn't come to fruition, because I love being a pastor. I love being involved in a local church. I love the fact that my life is not a self-absorbed obsession about trying to write songs and perform the best, but is instead about delivering good news and trying to build up the faith of others and to bring some healing and hope to a very dark world. That's why perhaps the way to put that together, plan as if it all depends on you, pray as if it all depends on God, is really found in that little statement in verse 15 of James. When James says, here's how you ought to approach life. If the Lord wills, we will do this and that. My mom, who is a wonderful saint of God, who would never ever want to read any of the books I read about theology, who would never ever be interested in any of the deep mysteries of providence or Trinity or, you know, ecclesiology or eschatology, all the things that fascinate me and drive me and of which I'm ever curious. My mom, who just has a very simple faith and yet a very profound faith and a true faith, ends almost every sentence, anytime she talks about, we're going to come up and see you this Christmas, they're going to see us this Christmas, God willing. We'll see you Christmas time, talk to you next time, God willing. Now, that can just be an empty spiritual phrase, but for her it's not. Because in her mind, she understands that her plans have sometimes succeeded, oftentimes they've failed, and the one thing she knows is God is the constant in the midst of all of this. God is included in her plans. Well, as we approach communion, this is where perhaps we can see how the communion table, as always, intersects with everything that is true and good and right. Because no matter where we are on life's journey, there is this sense in which a table's been prepared for us. The psalmist in Psalm 23 did not plan on journeying through the valley of the shadow of death. No one puts on their plans, today I want to journey through the valley of the shadow of death. That would be exciting. You know, I guess some thrill seekers might want to do that, but most of us, that's not on our agenda. So when the psalmist in Psalm 23 finds himself journeying through the valley of the shadow of death, he's terrified. His plans have been foiled and frustrated. He hasn't succeeded in what he was hoping to discover. And yet he finds in the midst of this valley, in this dark place that he did not choose, a table prepared. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies, here in the valley of the shadow of death. And it's the same for us, because when we come to the communion table, we are remembering in our plans as we think about what we're going to do today and next week and next year, as we strategize and pour our resources into trying to see our own dreams come true, that there is a constant. And that constant is the presence of God. That constant is that God provides a table wherever we find ourselves, whether we've succeeded in getting to where we wanted to be, or whether we're completely in the darkness of the valley of the shadow of death, that there is the one constant, that a table's been prepared. And knowing that, we find courage. Would you pray with me?